And welcome to the Midday with Vicki and Norman.
And we're welcoming in from the cold two guest musicians who will be performing tonight in Madison, violinist Judith Ingolfson and cellist Mark Kossauer. So welcome.
And thank you. The cold is no big deal for you because, Mark, you're from Eau Claire.
Right.
And Judith, you're from Iceland.
Yes.
So you're used to this kind of thing.
We should be.
Should be.
It comes as a surprise when you travel from other places performing in warmer climates, though, doesn't it?
But, Judith, you're more or less located in, what, Colorado now?
I have a teaching position in Boulder, Colorado, but I also have a place in Berlin, Germany, so I'm back and forth a lot. But it's relatively dark in Berlin as well at the moment, and occasionally cold as well. So,
but Mark, you're in San Francisco, is that right?
I was in San Francisco, and now I'm based in Bamberg, Germany, also in a darker place than here, light-wise. But I play in the Bamberg Symphony as a solo cellist, and then travel often to the United States for concerts and somewhat in Europe, too.
And you're in town, both of you, to play the Brahms double.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
With the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra, and that's tonight?
Tonight at 8 o'clock at
the Capitol Theater?
Yes. Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra, that's a work that's not often performed in concert, and I wonder what joys and what traumas you go through as you work together in that.
So far, no trauma.
I was about to say the same thing. I don't know if it's played that on off, and I think that it's played. I think it's such a phenomenal piece that it should definitely be played a lot. I first played it with my sister, who's a cellist, when we were teenagers.
Wow,
that's great. But it's such a phenomenal piece, and Mark and I have played it together before, and when it's been a lot of fun to do it again, and bring some new ideas back and even some old ones.
What do you talk about when you sit down to play this? What do you say? Well, last time we played it, it was let's do more of this or less of that, or what kind of thing?
Well, certainly it makes a difference if you've played it together before, even if it, you know, regardless of how long ago it was, because you become somewhat acquainted with the other person's playing, and then also we've played a lot together in chamber music too, so we're
right.
quite familiar with each other's music making. But I think with this piece, the Brahms double, the real challenge of the piece is playing as a soloist with orchestra and also having an intimate conversation with each other in a very because the writing is very intricately written and there's lots of chamber music type dialogue, and so in as far as discussion is concerned, usually it's better to play first because a lot of things are solved by playing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And then maybe a few things here and there may come up. But I can say what we've been working on is trying to have a strong, very closely knit and unified playing together so we when we lead that it becomes very apparent for the orchestra what to do.
Right, so that we are leading it together. And it's interesting to have in this particular piece, the chamber music aspect of the two soloists working together and the symphonic aspect of the piece itself, because it really is a very symphonic piece.
Yes, indeed.
And so then you have several conversations going on at the same time. So that's really what we've been working on, is just solidifying our statement as a duo so that the whole thing comes together as convincingly as possible.
Does the violin and the cello, do they have personalities? Do they have personas in this dialogue, would you say?
Well, they do in a way. The story behind the concerto is apparently that Brahms offered it to Joachim as a kind of a peace offering. And so one could interpret that the two instruments are like two people trying to mend a friendship. And there is something to that, really. There's a lot of weaving, interweaving lines, and sometimes more energetically against each other, sometimes very much together and on one the same musical statement. Sometimes it's almost as if we're arguing. So there's a lot of humor also, and in the piece. So there's everything you can look for.
Is there eye contact between you two when you play this piece?
Yes, I mean, especially at critical moments. For me, I think by far the most powerful thing is the ear, and if you're really tuned into what's going on around you, sometimes it's not even necessary to look.
Yeah.
But of course, that can also depend on how familiar you are with the person you're playing with and the people. But getting back to what Judith was saying, it really feels like the piece is about working out differences, and then there's this glorious reconciliation in the coda of the last movement. Mm. And I don't know about for you, but for me, it almost feels like there's a role playing too between the two instruments. I feel like the cellist is, maybe I'm Brahms, and you're Joachim, and we're working on our differences.
I wondered about that.
I hadn't gone that far thinking about it, but yeah. Uh-huh. I'll have to give that some thought.
And you're both used to working with other, in duos, with pianists. I know, Mark, you are married to a pianist.
Right.
And you have a duo, a violin-piano duo, where you bring out some interesting equal weights in, or at least you had.
Yes.
I don't know if that's still going.
Yes. We just founded this duo in 2006. We started performing in this particular way. We have a way of programming where we both, since Vladimir Stubel, the pianist, is also a soloist, we decided that instead of doing the traditional violin recital where the violinists often play these show pieces like mm-hmm. Revel Tzigan or Carmen Fantasy or something, that each of us would instead play a solo piece. So we have the chamber music repertoire covered with a major sonata or two, depending, and then some major unaccompanied repertoire, either for violin or for piano. And it's a really fun way of programming, and some really interesting things have come out of it. And so far, it's been tremendously successful. We just did a program in Frankfurt, and we're doing a recital in Albuquerque in March, and National Gallery of Art in Washington in June. So
exciting!
Yeah.
And Mark, I know that you you perform. In addition to with the Bamberg Symphony, you perform cello recitals.
That's right. I met my wife. She was one of the first people I met in college when I went to Indiana University, and she was a studio pianist for Starker at the time. And and it was music actually that brought us together with the help of a mutual friend. But nevertheless, we've played extensively together in recitals throughout the United States and in Korea and Brazil and some in Europe too. We're going in 10 days to play combination recitals and chamber music in the state of Alaska. And
you just can't get enough of that cold, can you?
No. With some concerts in Anchorage, and then a state tour to some to Sitka and other places, and a couple of very remote places such as Nome.
Mm-hmm. So that's remote.
So wow. This will be quite an adventure.
Indeed.
Yeah.
A little extra tuning might be required by the time you get off the plane.
Yes, and hopefully nothing else.
Yes. Well, and you've played right here at the in Madison at the Chazen Museum on our Sunday afternoon live series, and you're a winner of our Neil Silva
Young Artist
competition.
Yes.
So
always had very wonderful memories from our performances here.
Should we hear some, what, Tchaikovsky?
We have Judith's new recording of the Tchaikovsky Violin Concerto, and the orchestra is...
The Budapest Philharmonic with Rico Sacani conducting.
And so the second movement?
We'll hear the second movement. There's more to come.
I'm tempted to call that the pretty movement of the Tchaikovsky Violin Concerto. Of course, those bigger, brasher movements are beautiful, too, in a different way.
That was the second movement of the Tchaikovsky Violin Concerto. Judith Ingolfsson was the soloist, and you were telling me that that was the first time, the first recording you'd made on a new violin.
Yes, this was the first recording on this violin that I'm currently playing. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting story because the label says Lorenzo Guadagnini, and it is very possibly of the Guadagnini school, but the label says 1750, which means that the person who was Lorenzo Guadagnini would have by then died, because he died in 1747. Mm. But to complicate matters further, Lorenzo Guadagnini apparently was not a violin maker. He was, I believe, a farmer or a butcher or something like that.
Well, he had a sideline.
And so
you may be onto something.
There are quite a few instruments out there with this Lorenzo Guadagnini label. Not a whole lot of them, but quite a few, and they are all excellent instruments, and I'm lucky to have been able to acquire this one. And one of the reasons I was able to afford it was the fact that the authenticity is highly questionable, and therefore, you know, it's hard to put a price tag on it. But for me, that doesn't matter because of the sound and the playability and the fact that it has just absolutely wonderful colors and also projection power. So it's still a very mysterious instrument, and it's something that I actually enjoy very much. That it's not, it's just a mystery. Yeah.
Were you playing a Strad before that?
I had two different ones at different times. I had the 1683 Gingold Strad, which I fell in love with it to the point where I still think of it as my violin, which it never was. and I still miss it. It was just an incredible instrument, but it belongs to the Indianapolis International Violin Competition, and so the winners have played it each for 4 years since they acquired it, although I was the first to use it. And then I had a different Strad for a couple of years on loan from the Nippon Foundation in Japan, and that was a Muntz Strad, and that was also an interesting instrument, phenomenal instrument, because he made it apparently when he was 92 years old. And I still can't believe that a 92-year-old can make a violin, but apparently he did.
He had lots of practice.
He sure did, that's for sure. Yeah.
Something certainly worked.
Yeah.
It's too bad that Tchaikovsky didn't write more for the cello. He wrote, of course, those Rococo variations that you've played in this very vicinity, Mark.
Right, which is a marvelous piece in its own right. He also wrote a short piece for cello and orchestra, the Pezzo Capriccioso, and the Andante Cantabile from the slow movement from one of the string quartets is performed with cello and orchestra. And now, of course, cellists have transcribed all kinds of things that he wrote. But we don't feel neglected by Tchaikovsky, but we sometimes wish Mozart would have written a cello sonata or a concerto. But
well, that's true, yeah. Mozart is kind of deficient in that regard, isn't
he? But he wrote so beautifully in all of the chamber music, we shouldn't complain.
It's too late for it anyway. Well, we're going to be hearing a little bit more of the Tchaikovsky in a couple of minutes, too, but what other opportunities might you two have to perform together, or is it fairly limited?
Well, we perform together every once in a while, and we've performed together, thankfully. It's always a pleasure. During summer festivals, we cross paths and often play together, and I hope that happens again.
I as well.
And so it's an interesting world we live in, and sometimes we don't know exactly what will happen one season to the next. So, but I'm sure it will happen somehow or another, because I'm always recommending Mark and telling people that, you know, if you need a cellist, you should hire Mark.
And when I was writing to people over the holidays, I told everybody I'm played with Judith. So,
so I'm sure something will work out.
I always like to ask what you listen to when you're not doing classical music, because I know you're not just a single vision musicians, that your lives are broader than that. So what music do you like to hear? What do you find yourself listening to?
Well, maybe I'm too much of a music nerd, but no. But I enjoy a wide variety of different types of music, and from popular genres to jazz to, of course, classical music. But I do spend a lot of time, and especially now since I'm in the Bamberg Symphony, I listen to a lot of orchestral music, and I've also liked to listen to vocal music, and especially, you know, like song cycles and these type of things. And over the years in my own development, I've found it so incredibly helpful as a musician to listen to other, you know, basically any instruments other than your own.
Mm-hmm. Is that so? So you don't listen a lot to, you know, old
Rostropovich?
Well, of course, as a cellist, I do listen to the great cellists and many current cellists today. But I think as a musician, you should strive to try to create all of the different timbres and all the different sounds of all of the orchestral instruments, as well as the voices of great singers, because by itself, our instrument is what it is. Mm-hmm. And we're always looking for as many different colors and different sounds for expression. And that's why we live in a very exciting time now, because this has now expanded into a folk music too, which I enjoy listening to when I have the opportunity, and to music from the Far East and from, you know, different countries around the world.
It's all out there now, isn't it? What about you, Judith? What do you listen to in the off hours, if there are such things?
Yeah, there aren't many off hours, and I tend to gravitate away from violin music, especially when I'm teaching, because I have so much violin going on. Although I have to confess that there's a particular violinist I listen to a lot these days, and that's Andrew Manzi.
Sure, yes.
I'm an absolute Andrew Manzi fan.
Also a conductor.
Yes. Everything he does, I think, is absolutely fabulous. And it goes together with my current sort of obsession with trying to figure out how to negotiate the relationship between the fact that I'm a modern violinist and the new information that's coming up with the Baroque performance practice, which is a topic that I'm very involved with right now. And that's generally how I listen to music, is I go through these phases of interests, and that's then turns out to be what I'm listening to. Other than classical music, I tend to gravitate towards jazz. That helps me sort of relax, in the sense, and I'm not terribly well educated when it comes to the more popular music or folk music things, although if it interests me, I take the time to look into it, like Irish music. I have a friend who was doing that, and I started listening to that a little bit, but I have to confess I'm not very very educated, and therefore I don't really enjoy it as much as some other people might.
Well, there were a lot of great jazz violinists, of course, and
yeah,
some great jazz Celtic players, or some great Celtic violinists, too.
Right.
Shall we hear some more Tchaikovsky after
yes,
asking that quiz question?
All right, and just remind people that you can hear some wonderful Brahms tonight, that double violin cello concerto. with the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra, a concert at 8 o'clock at the Capitol Theater in Madison. Also, Shedrin Chamber Suite on the program, and a string orchestra arrangement of the Death and the Maiden String Quartet by Schubert.
A rarity. Now, about this Tchaikovsky that we'll launch while we're taking some calls.
It's the last movement. Again, Judith Ingolfsson.
Of the one and only Tchaikovsky Violin Concerto.
Yes, that's the only one. And tell us again the
it's the
conductor.
Budapest Philharmonic, Riko Sakani conducting.
Thank you.
Liked it. Somebody's banging on something.
Even the string section, I think, was saluting you.
Lovely, a lovely performance of the finale of the Tchaikovsky Violin Concerto in D with Judith Ingolfsson as the soloist. And the whole work is on a CD,
coming
right?
Coming out soon.
It's downloadable on the internet at the moment, and the physical CD is coming out next week. So,
how exciting.
If people want to buy it, the best way to check it, the status, is to go to my website, actually, which is, should I say my website address? www.judithingolfsson.com.
And you spell Ingolfsson. With two S's.
Mm-hmm. I-N-G-O-L-F-S-S-O-N.
And you'll find all kinds of things there. The download is an interesting phenomenon, isn't it? Because you can sell things without even having them physically there.
Exactly.
It's a new age.
Not to put too fine a point on it, but do you also get liner notes, though? I mean, not you can't download them necessarily, but at the website or something? Or is this just something that's purely musical?
The different sites seem to be different. I think on eMusic and some other places, it's only the music that you would download. But once it comes out on iTunes, I think on iTunes you can download the liner notes as well.
It's a very, very popular, quickly even more popular way of getting music these days.
Yeah.
And you were telling us a little bit about bow making, and it's fascinating about the wood that's used and how that all started.
That's right. Europe, throughout the centuries, there was, a large trade industry and overseas. And world trade networks even centuries ago that, you know, you wouldn't necessarily think about because of course, travel was much more difficult. But the wood that the bow makers decided upon to make bows, they first found in the shipyards and the port cities because Pernambuco wood from Brazil was used to ship goods from that part of the world. And so apparently some of the bow makers went down to the shipyards looking for scraps of wood and different, or who knows, maybe they're buying something, and they saw these crates and this wood they'd never seen before. And so then they must have just broken off a few pieces of it and took it home and carved a bow out of it and tried it. And of course, you can make bows and successfully and that sound good out of other types of wood, but Pernambuco wood was the wood that was decided upon that sounded the best and has been used ever since as the standard for bow making.
And I guess is running in short supply.
That's right, and of course with the depletion of rainforests and this type of thing in Brazil where this wood is from, it's become a problem. And I know from the person who takes care of my equipment, my bows in New York, that now the instrument makers have come together, or the bow makers, I should say, and are buying plots of land in Brazil and are planting the tree to try to replenish this wood that's disappearing, because it is a concern. With proper care and people who really care about the art, taking steps like this, and then of course with innovations from man, we'll be okay.
Let's hope so.
Knock on wood. So
knock on wood. Yeah, exactly.
We'll repeat the 12:30 quiz question in just a moment. This is The Midday and Wisconsin Public Radio.